It was a troubling case in that you had a person that is literally a witness called by the court that, you know, is lying.
A massive months-long effort to catch a traitor in the Indiana court system.
This guy's an entrepreneur, isn't he?
Wow.
Led WNIN and Side Effects investigators to a potentially much larger pool of victims.
Do you think that if Albert Fink had not crashed his car and admitted to the officers that he falsified those mental evaluations, would he have ever been caught?
I'd have to say maybe.
When Bloomington, Indiana psychologist Albert Fink admitted he falsified a mental evaluation in a criminal case last year, it set off a cascade of consequences that continues today. While the 85-year-old Fink has been caught and punished, his crime calls into question over 10,000 criminal cases and Social Security disability claims for which he provided evaluations or testing. A bizarre set of circumstances first brought the case to light. In the summer of 2016, Vandenberg County Attorney Stephen Owens was preparing his defense in the arson and explosives trial of an Evansville man, Caleb Loving. Dr. Albert Fink was one of two psychologists who determined that Loving was legally competent to stand trial. Problem was, Fink never saw Caleb Loving. Owens was the first person to question Fink's report.
So I talked to him probably three times, and each conversation got a little more odd. I think the second time I called, I talked to him and I said, you said you're going to send me this data. I've not received it. And then I think the last time I talked to him was to confirm that he had been called by the court. And again, we went through this whole rigmarole. Well, you've got my report, and didn't we agree, and that sort of thing. Yeah, but you got to testify. By the way, I still haven't got my data yet. You know, when are you going to send it to me so I can look at it? After that, I started looking into document how long. Actually, I pulled the jail visitation records to see if I could document how long he had actually been there to see Caleb. And discovered that there was no listing of him being there. I was certainly going to question him on this issue of how long he had spent with Caleb because I had the jail records. I mean, I knew it didn't show he was there at that point. I still probably didn't think he had not shown up at all.
While Albert Fink knew he was facing a grilling in court in the Caleb Loving case, he also knew that no one in the court could really tell if the evaluation was phony. He wasn't necessarily caught yet. But Albert Fink has a history of doing strange things under pressure. Records show that once in a small claims case and another time when he surrendered his license in Kentucky, Fink reacted strangely under stress. Even so, what happened next is nearly unbelievable. I'm standing alongside Indiana State Road 46 just outside Bloomington, next to a tree where Albert Fink crashed his car, opening a case that sent shockwaves throughout Indiana and beyond. It was at lunchtime that Albert Fink went for a drive that ended at the tree. At some point during the drive, Fink decided the game was up. At a curve near East Bender Road, he moved the steering wheel a little to the right. Far enough to end his career, but not quite far enough to end his life. The day we were at the crash site, truck driver and evangelical preacher Lauren Weems pulled up just as he did that day in 2016. He describes the scene.
They looked like that someone had lost control. I saw tracks coming off the road into the grass, and where they had just nicked a large tree here in the corner and then ended up in my parking lot. I remember as a pretty nice black car at the time. I can't remember if it was a BMW or a Mercedes.
Actually, it was BMW.
Oh, okay.
A 2012 black BMW.
It was a really nice car, I remember.
Indiana State Police Sergeant Kurt Durnell says by chance, ISP detectives were driving right behind Fink that day.
The crash actually happened, not directly in front of them, but they arrived on the scene probably a few seconds or a minute afterwards. Once they realized what had happened, they had a conversation with Mr. Fink. This crash was actually intentional, and that his intention was to commit suicide right here on the strip.
So, did the pressure from defense attorney Owens about the Caleb Loving case prompt Albert Fink to consider a dramatic exit? Vandenberg County Prosecutor Nick Herman picks up the story from there.
We were in the middle of a trial, a pretty big trial, and someone in our office got a phone call from a state trooper that said, hey, you know, this doctor was in an accident, and he says that he falsified a report, didn't finish a report, something like that, and he was going to be called as a witness the next day. And we quickly realized that was the trial we were in. If I remember correctly, it was a Wednesday, so it was the third day of a trial, so we were halfway through or even further along with the trial. And once that disclosure was made, both the defense attorney and my deputy prosecutor moved for mistrial to have the jury discharged so that we could have another psychologist evaluate the defendant. And as I recall, we had a press conference either that day or the following day to let the public know why this big trial just stopped in the middle.
Albert Fink did court-ordered testing and evaluations in dozens of cases over many years. Courts throughout Southwest Indiana began scouring their records for cases in which Fink provided services. The sleepy town of Shoals straddles the East Fork of the White River in Martin County, Indiana. It was here, some 80 miles away from Evansville, that word of Albert Fink's arrest reached prosecutor Mike Steiner. Steiner had two cases with ties to Fink. One of them was a high-profile double homicide case against a man named Nathan Baker.
Have you ever come across anything quite like this?
No, I have not. No, I have no frame of reference for this at all.
Generally, in the court system, psychologists, it is a trusted profession, and I think that that actually may make it more likely that somebody could do the things that Dr. Fink's alleged have done.
Absolutely, and it's just like any other profession. I mean, physicians have their problem physicians, lawyers have their problem lawyers, engineers have their problem engineers, clergy have their problem clergy. It's every profession, because it's a human endeavor, are gonna have problems.
Do you have any opinions on what could be changed within the system to keep that from happening?
Not really. And the reason is that at some level, we have to trust people to do that which they are supposed to do.
Another common comment is that in addition to being willing to work for low pay, a big reason that practitioners like Albert Fink get used in the court system is that many psychologists won't work with the courts at any price.
Sometimes with the way we lawyers behave, I can't really say that I blame them too much. I mean, it's clearly an adversarial situation. And I also think that some of the mental health providers primarily, and not just mental health providers, but medical professionals in general, have a certain distaste or discomfort or fear of the legal system. They don't want to testify. They don't want to be in court. They don't want to be subject to cross-examination for a lot of different reasons.
In general, the defense side of the courtroom seemed a little more shaken by the story of Albert Fink. David Smith is the defense attorney in the Nathan Baker case.
It disturbs me a lot. As concerned as I am about it, the judges are more concerned, because ultimately, as the participants in the system responsible to make sure justice is done and rights are preserved, it's ultimately going to fall on the judge's lap. If appeals occur, if irregularities take place in trial proceedings, they end up being the ones held responsible for those things.
Does it disturb you, though, that the evaluations could be looked at if they weren't actually done? They could be looked at it and not get caught?
It's absolutely frightening to me that an evaluation could not be done, but the opinions expressed in those evaluations could have substantive impact on a criminal case, especially a serious one. Absolutely.
How do you think that could even happen?
Well, I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know. I was surprised to hear not just that it occurred, but apparently, as the allegations go, in several cases and over some period of time. That seems hard to envision that no one would ask and that no one would find out sooner.
While court officials throughout Southwest Indiana are looking at their processes of hiring outside experts, perhaps no one is more interested than Vandenberg County Chief Public Defender Steve Owens. While Owens ultimately was the one who raised the questions that got Albert Fink convicted, it is also his office that defended most of the nearly 70 cases Fink provided services for in Vandenberg County.
There were issues with regards to the timing of him being appointed to do an evaluation, and the timing, the time lag between that appointment and the issuance of the report or the receipt of the report, that would have caused me, in hindsight, to go back and say, I'm not sure that he actually did the evaluation.
It was too quick?
Yes. It was much too quick.
Can you give me an example?
3 days? 5 days? I mean, you have to understand, while this was all going on, prosecutor's office and I are talking back and forth. They're you know, going up and searching his offices and stuff. And my understanding from talking with them was they were having problems finding records that he had actually performed some of these evaluations. Knowing now what we know about Dr. Fink, that probably should have been a red flag at some point to somebody to say, this is a little quick. You know, did it really happen? But there was nothing about looking at his report that jumped out at anybody and said, oh, he didn't do this.
Does it concern you that he could write reports on these evaluations and no one would question him if he hadn't even seen the person?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real concern. And that's a concern more so now than maybe it was before. I mean, we're not physicians, we're not psychologists, we're not psychiatrists. So when I asked the court to appoint somebody and have them evaluated for competency, there's sort of an expectation on my part that whoever they hire to do that is actually going to do it. But I don't know that I have enough skill or knowledge, I'm not sure any of us do, to definitively say one way or the other that this person actually got seen or not.
Do you think that if Albert Fink had not crashed his car and admitted to the officers that he falsified those mental evaluations, would he have ever been caught?
I'd have to say maybe. And whether it would have been this case or not, I don't know. I think at some point, yeah, he might have been caught had he been testifying. I don't know. I think I'd like to think that somebody at some point would have caught up with him. Obviously, we didn't catch up with him all these other cases.
So there were some warning signs that were missed that allowed Albert Fink to continue gaming the system in Vandenberg County. Does Owens think anything will change?
in our office, we need to be a little more cognizant of things like turnaround times. I think in major cases anymore, I think it's well worth the time to retain an independent expert to review what the court's witnesses are saying, because there's a lot at stake there. It's a subjective determination. The qualifications for some people to do these evaluations are minimal. The fact that they're a psychologist doesn't necessarily mean they're qualified to be doing competency and sanity evaluations. I don't think that is a just simply you're a psychologist that I don't think gets it. And that's one of the problems.
It meets the legal standard, though.
It does meet the legal standard, but there's a vast difference between being a child psychologist, for example, and being somebody who does forensic evaluations for competency and sanity. Even though technically I meet the legal standard, I can go out and do that if I want.
Well, that's up to the judge, though, to decide whether that person's competent to, that psychologist is competent.
Well, as you say, it meets the legal standard. I don't think the judges look beyond that. I don't think the judge looks at beyond that. It says, disinterested psychiatrist or psychologist. Isn't that what the statute says? And I don't think the judge looks beyond that language of saying they are a psychologist or they're a psychiatrist and they're willing to do them, preferably at a reduced rate. I mean, I think, I really don't think the judges look beyond that. Now, the question is, should they look beyond that? I don't know. I mean, somebody should.
Steve Owen's comments are direct and disturbing. First, that many in the legal system don't understand a critical piece of evidence well enough to know if it's been falsified. Second, that competency and sanity exams are being performed by professionals who are unqualified or at least underqualified. When we come back, more on that discussion and a possible solution that's receiving positive feedback from an important judicial source. I'm Steve Berger. You're listening to A Scar on the System, a collaboration of WNIN and Side Effects Public Media. Albert Fink was convicted of falsifying a competency exam in one criminal case, but as we've heard already, more were suspected. How many more? The WNIN Side Effects investigation revealed that more than 40% of the evaluations Albert Fink performed in Vandenberg County may have been falsified. Our inquiry prompted action at the highest levels of the Indiana court system. The disturbing comments from Steve Owens and others prompted us to contact the person perhaps best qualified to discuss legal competency in Indiana from a medical perspective. Dr. George Parker is with the Indiana University School of Medicine. In addition to researching competency, he's performed hundreds of competency exams in Indiana and spent more than a decade as the chief medical officer of Indiana's state mental hospitals. I talked with Dr. Parker at his office at the IU Med School in Indianapolis. Dr. Parker's take? As bad as it sounds, Steve Owens is right.
The all the attorneys I've interviewed, prosecutors and defense attorneys, have said in some form or another, we are not capable of monitoring those reports and having any idea whether they're falsified or not because we don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to be able to. I mean, I think they should know what a good report looks like, and they'll be able to say that, and they'll know what kind of report a particular examiner writes because they see them over time. But they won't know whether report number 23 is fiction when, you know, 21 and 22 were good and were the same format. We all have our own standard formats for our reports. And as long as it fits the format for that particular examiner, folks aren't going to notice that. Even inside the profession, it might be hard to pick that up. Because he said he went and saw the person, and so we don't know what that person's history is. That he's making up that person's history or making up the evaluation, we weren't there. We don't know that person.
So what do you do about that?
I don't know. I mean, it's such a gross breach of the ethical standards that it's like, you know, what's the phrase? It's inconceivable, but obviously it happened. It's just stunning that someone would do that and do it so significantly. I mean, I can sort of construct a slippery slope where you start sort of making up little bits because the interview was going that way and you just need a little more support, so you change a quote or, you know, something like that. But to, like, say that you went and saw somebody when you didn't, and to make up the information that you learned or the testing that you did from that time, words fail me.
Indiana Code specifically states that the psychiatrist, psychologist with expertise in determining competency, that's what the law says.
Well, that's what the statute says, but in reality, it's whether the judges can find someone who can do the evaluation. Now, in Marion County, here in Indianapolis, there are a few choices. The judges have some options, and the folks that do most of them, myself included, have a fair amount of experience doing them. But when you get into the rural counties, well, it's hard to find mental health professionals, period, in the smaller counties and even in the smaller cities. And to find one that's willing to take the time to go to jail and do an evaluation and then work around the court schedule to perhaps testify at a hearing, a lot of folks are not interested in doing that. And it's hard to find folks who are willing to do that. And so it's a matter of who's willing and available to do the evaluations, not so much whether they have expertise. I think it can make a pretty persuasive argument that it'd be good to have some kind of central agency that has oversight on the people who do the evaluations and the quality of the reports that are done with some basic certification process. So if somebody wants to do court-ordered evaluations, there'd be some fairly straightforward way that they could get basic training on, you know, what the standards are, how to do the interviews, how to write the reports, and how to testify effectively. Nothing onerous, but, you know, it would require the investment of a day or online training or something. And then have some kind of a system where the reports that are submitted get sent to some central agency. It could be one or two or three people, maybe some of them are volunteers, I don't know, that would review them and say, okay, yeah, this guy's doing a good job. Oh, they need to work on this section. So there'd be some kind of feedback so you could stay certified. That would be great.
Another person who thinks that some form of voluntary certification should be considered is former Indiana Chief Justice Randall Shepard. After hearing about Dr. Parker's idea while previewing our series, he said he wanted to know more about the concept during an appearance on the No Limits program on WFYI. While court-ordered competency exams have nearly tripled in Indiana in the past 5 years, the cases still represent only a tiny fraction of the total caseload. However, there is universal agreement among the people we talked with for this project that defendants for whom competency testing is ordered are among the most vulnerable in the court system. Perhaps the relatively low overall numbers mean the issue doesn't rise to the level of needing legislative action. However, as Dr. Parker noted, a voluntary certification and monitoring program could be put in place without changing any laws.
The big issue with the case is the doctor's statement that this has happened multiple times. I do expect that there will be multiple counts filed in the future. At this time, I don't know how many.
That comment from Vandenberg County Prosecutor Nick Herman shortly after announcing felony charges against Albert Fink in August of 2016 was similar to what we heard from several people during the course of our investigation. But we could never get anyone to say how many other evaluations were suspected of being falsified. Evansville police spent hundreds of hours tracking down information on every case in Vandenberg County with ties to Albert Fink. Herman and Chief Public Defender Steve Owens both told us that they reviewed every case and were satisfied that no outcomes would have changed regardless of Fink's involvement. Given that the prosecutor, Nick Herman, anticipated more falsified evaluations, why weren't more charges filed? As we noted earlier, there's a big difference between suspecting an evaluation was falsified and being able to prove it in court. So, with a felony conviction sealed and his licenses surrendered, for Vandenberg County, the case against Albert Fink was closed. Just as we were wrapping up our investigation, a source sent us a list of 29 cases, including Caleb Loving's, in which it was suspected that Fink may have falsified the competency exams. That jaw-dropping number meant that authorities suspected Albert Fink might have falsified over 40% of the evaluations for which he was paid by Vandenberg County. What about those other cases? Was justice done by simply saying that the outcomes would not have changed? Former Chief Justice Shepard talked about it with host John Krull during the No Limits program on WFYI.
We have an entire system, and one of the biggest law offices in Indiana, the state public defender, is charged with going back and looking for the needles in the haystack, try to find people who, not just on these grounds, but on other grounds, didn't get a fair trial, didn't have an adequate legal protection.
Although no relation, Indiana's chief public defender is also named Stephen Owens. When we contacted him, Owens knew of the list and had been watching for any defendants who might file for post-conviction relief based on the fact that the psychologist who performed their competency exams was now a convicted felon for falsifying one exam and was suspected of many more. There was a problem, however. The public defender's office doesn't solicit cases. During a phone conversation with Owens, I pointed out that some of the defendants in those cases were either in prison or mental hospitals and would probably have no knowledge of Fink's conviction and thus no reason to ask for a review of their cases. In a follow-up call, Owens had some news.
What we did was contacted Judge Mary Willis, who's the court administrator for the Supreme Court, and said, you know, because of the situation, generally we don't solicit these cases once it was brought to our attention. And to be honest with you, once we heard from you, and I decided that, you know, maybe this is a case that we should try to advise those individuals who may have been affected by this. So I got permission to send a form letter to all of the individuals that we could find addresses on. We sent out a letter informing them that we found out what happened with Dr. Fink and their cases, and if they did want to attack their conviction, post-conviction was the way to go. And we could help them if they were incarcerated in the Department of Correction under the post-conviction rules. You know, otherwise they would have to maybe try to get private counsel or attempt to go pro se.
What happens next?
For us, mostly kind of a wait and see if we hear from anybody. Of course, if we do and we can represent them, then you know they'll be assigned an attorney and then we'll look into their case.
So far, two of the defendants on that list have filed for a review of their convictions. Almost a year to the day after he crashed his car into the tree, Albert Fink pleaded guilty to one count of obstructing justice, a felony in Indiana. He received probation and had to surrender his license to practice psychology. Throughout several hearings, he remained silent on his case. Just before he went into court to plead guilty, however, we caught up with him outside a restaurant across the street from the Gibson County Courthouse just before his sentencing. He wouldn't let us record it, but when I asked him for a comment, he said, quote, "It doesn't matter. I'm ruined anyway." Nothing anyone can do or say will change that. After his sentencing, Dr. Fink was in a much better mood. We got a quick comment on tape, but from a distance.
Relief and still have some concerns.
All right, thank you, Dr. Fink.
It's a little hard to hear, but what he said was relief and still some concerns. Since that court hearing, I've tried numerous times to contact Albert Fink for an interview. He has not returned my calls. However, I did reach him once and had a 20-minute phone conversation with Dr. Fink after I agreed that his comments would be off the record. I can say that he was fairly upbeat and much more confident now that he knew he wasn't going to prison. But he was very guarded with all of my questions and wouldn't even confirm basic information. We left it with him considering a formal interview.
This is Albert Fink.
Can't take your call now. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, simply hang up or press the pound key for further options.
Let's take a short break. Thanks to a tip early in our investigation, we knew that as much damage as Albert Fink has caused the legal system in Indiana, it's really only the tip of the iceberg of the total damage that could result from his crime. Following his retirement as a psychology professor at Indiana University in 1996, Dr. Fink began doing the court-ordered competency exams. We learned that he also had an active practice performing what are known as consultative exams for Social Security Administration disability claims. So active that beginning at age 73, that part of his practice alone would have stretched the endurance of a much younger man. I'm Steve Berger. You're listening to A Scar on the System, a collaboration of WNIN and Side Effects Public Media. As we've heard, court officials are willing to discuss the impact of Albert Fink's crime and possible solutions, and to take action when we point out that might be necessary. The polar opposite is the response from some state and federal officials who stonewall and then ignore our request for information, who push the envelope on outright lying to us about Dr. Fink's work on disability claims. Perhaps those responsible for his disability claims work are looking at the numbers. We don't know if Albert Fink set the record, but he surely is a contender for the most Social Security disability exams and testing ever performed by an octogenarian. More than 10,000 cases from age 73 to age 83. But a felony conviction for falsifying similar work can't be ignored forever. Our persistent inquiries have produced some results for those impacted by Dr. Fink's crime. Within a few days of breaking the news about Albert Fink's confession in the Caleb Loving court trial, we contacted Dr. Bob Wilson of Evansville, who's now deceased, to see if he could help make sense of what was becoming an increasingly bizarre story. Bob, also a psychologist, said he first met Albert Fink when they worked together on what is known as a consultative examination in a Social Security disability case. That evaluation with Bob Wilson was one of 10,567 cases in which Dr. Fink performed exams or testing for Social Security beginning in 2006. Given his conviction in the criminal case, if Albert Fink took shortcuts on his work for SSA, as he did for the courts, people who should be getting aid for physical and mental disabilities may have had their claims wrongly denied based in part on Fink's evaluation. Likewise, people who perhaps shouldn't be getting aid could have been given recommendations intended to avoid scrutiny. Several Freedom of Information Act requests, denials, appeals, and mediation later, we know little about Albert Fink's work for SSA, except the total number of consultative exams he performed in Indiana, for which he was paid over $1.6 million. We broadcast appeals on WNIN for disability claimants and contacted area attorneys who have worked with SSA disability claims. We heard from several claimants. In the processing of her claim for a physical ailment, Gisela Fisher had a consultative mental exam with Fink in 2013. After years of appeals, her disability claim was eventually denied. Ms. Fisher talked with us about her exam.
The way I remember it, there was a mother and her son in the waiting room when I arrived. He explained that he lived in Bloomington and came down like once a week to take appointments in Evansville. And so we were his first appointments for the day. But, you know, I went in and we talked for a while. And he asked me if I was experiencing any issues, psychological issues. You know, he asked me if I heard voices or saw things, or if I was disturbed by anything, or, you know, I don't remember exactly what questions he asked, but it would be the normal questions that one would expect that a psychologist would ask, I suppose, to find out if you were having psychological issues. And then he mentioned that I spoke German, and he said he did too. And so then we started a little conversation in German, and he asked me if I thought I had any psychological problems, and I told him, no, not really. I think I have a pretty normal reaction to poverty, and he kind of let it go at that.
About how long did it last?
I don't think it was much. It's probably between 15, 20 minutes. I wasn't uncomfortable in his presence. I thought his demeanor toward me was appropriate. I think I was a little bit surprised by the fact that there was no receptionist or anyone else there working with him. But I didn't really spend much time thinking about it at the time because I was only there for 15 or 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes, at least for this claim. We also heard from a local attorney who appealed the denial when it was revealed that the mother of the claimant said that Fink's interview was over before she could finish her cigarette.
Whoa.
I don't think
sorry,
I've made that in my whole life. This guy's an entrepreneur, isn't he?
Wow.
We interviewed other psychologists who have done disability claims work. That expression of surprise came when we showed Dr. Michael Pisano of Indianapolis the list of payments made to Dr. Fink that we obtained from the Indiana Auditor's Office. Side Effects public media reporter Jake Harper is the interviewer.
Does $15,000 in 1 month sound high to you?
It does sound very high. Yeah.
What would
in 1 month, let's say he worked a typical 20 days, that would mean $750 in a day. He could do that if he did 8 evaluations in a day, every day.
Do you know anyone that does that?
Not offhand, no.
When we interviewed Dr. Pisano in December of 2016, he said he had performed about 500 consultative exams for disability claims. To get some perspective on the experience that Gisela Fischer had with Dr. Fink, we asked Dr. Pisano to describe how he conducts the same exam.
I will bring them into my office, ask them to show me a picture ID if they have one, to verify who they are. And then I divide the interview itself into 3 parts. The first part is what I call a mental status exam, and that's to evaluate specific mental abilities, such as abstract thinking, memory, ability to do mathematical problems, and so on. The second part includes an assessment of their adaptive functioning. How well are they able to negotiate their typical day? So how often do they bathe? What household chores do they do? Can they use a computer? Do they go shopping on their own? Can they handle money? What are their leisure activities? What level of social interaction do they have? And thirdly, I ask them about their history. So that would be their family history, their work history, their personal and psychological history, any previous contacts with the mental health system, and so on. At the end of that, I pull it all together and I try to provide recommendations and also my diagnosis or diagnoses.
How long does that part take, the examination that you do with the patient?
The actual interview takes me between an hour and 15 minutes.
Catherine Nordahl is another psychologist who has done consultative exams in her career.
I'd say maybe on average 4 to 5 hours per claimant. And at 4 to 5 hours, let's say you saw patients 30 hours a week, that could be 6 patients a week, 24 patients a month, and then whatever 24 times 12 is a year, if that's all you did.
24 times 12 is 288 evaluations a year, and that's pretty much what we heard was the top end of what would be considered a substantial annual workload by most psychologists. It was only part of his practice, but Albert Fink still averaged over 3 times that many, over 1,000 cases a year beginning at age 73. With over 2 million applications for disability filed each year in the U.S., you can imagine how expensive it would be if all the people who provided input on those claims were federal employees. So it makes sense from an economic standpoint that the Social Security Administration contracts for those services with the various state and regional disability determination bureaus. It also makes sense if you don't want to have to answer too many questions about whether the system actually works. The SSA accepts full responsibility for all disability claims, but contracts the work. In Indiana, a Department of the Family and Social Services Administration hires, monitors, and pays the contractors who do the work, but they claim no responsibility for what happens in that process. As we've noted, Albert Fink was an enthusiastic participant. I'm Steve Berger. You're listening to A Scar on the System, a collaboration of WNIN and SideFX Public Media. When we informed state and federal disability officials of Albert Fink's felony charges in August of 2016, we asked if there would be an investigation of his similar work for SSA. Other than a few brief, unguarded comments at the beginning of our inquiry, the response from state and federal officials about almost any aspect of Social Security's disability claims program has been to either refuse to answer questions or simply ignore them. So we asked contributor Ron Brown to try to get a response about any measure Social Security might take regarding the over 10,000 cases Albert Fink worked on for them in light of his conviction for falsifying a criminal case evaluation.
I've been trying to get an interview with Social Security Administration Regional Communications Director Doug Wynn for several months to ask him about the felony charges filed against Dr. Albert Fink and how the Social Security Administration was handling it. Wynn had stopped responding to emails from WNIN, so we thought a personal visit would work better. I'm standing outside the Harold Washington Social Security Center at 600 West Madison Street. It's easily recognizable by the 100-foot-tall steel baseball bat in front of the building. Doug Wynn has an office on the 10th floor. This would be my third time coming in to ask for an interview with Doug Wynn. We'll see how it goes. There's security at the front desk.
Hi, sir.
How you doing? Fine.
Social Security?
Yes, for Doug Wynn.
You're in the right building. You're coming in?
I'd like to speak with Doug Wynn.
Okay. You are?
Ron Brown, W.
He's expecting you?
I think so. I mean, I don't have an appointment, but I've asked him a couple of times for a quick interview.
No!
WNIN.
I know.
At this point, the security guard is looking up the phone number for the regional communications director and giving him a call.
Hey, Doug. What's your name?
Ron Brown. Ron Brown?
I've got a Ron Brown down here. Okay. Would you like me to just inform him back, or? No problem. Sure. He said he's in a meeting right now, and whatever you guys are working on, he'll get back to you.
All right. Thank you very much. Finally, on December 4th, Doug Wynn, Regional Communications Director for the Social Security Administration's Chicago region, did send a reply. He said that he contacted the Office of Inspector General to help get answers for our questions. Among other things, he wrote that the Fink criminal case doesn't concern or involve the Social Security Administration because it's a state issue only. Consultative examiners like Fink are licensed in the state and don't make determinations on disability claims for the Social Security Administration, he wrote. Those determinations are made by trained medical staff who make sound decisions according to the rules and regulations for determining Social Security claims. But what if they're getting bad information? The question about whether the Social Security Administration is concerned about the quality and accuracy of information in the thousands and thousands of Fink examinations simply was not answered. I'm Ron Brown for WNIN.
So, our reporting did prompt Doug Wynn to notify the Office of the Inspector General about Fink's felony charges. The OIG, by the way, will not confirm whether an investigation is underway or has ever been started. But SSA still won't acknowledge whether they intend to do what the criminal justice system in Indiana has done. That is to look into the cases Albert Fink provided services for and contact the claimants who may have been affected so they can take appropriate steps if any are needed. What about the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration? Their response has been repeated denials of any responsibility, always referring to the fact that Social Security is responsible, even when we ask about hiring, monitoring, and paying the vendors, which a department of FSSA clearly does for this service. We asked Indiana Auditor Tara Klutz to clarify the relationship the state has with all vendors.
When an agency authorizes payments, what are they attesting to?
When an agency authorizes a payment, they are basically validating that they've received the services on the invoice or received the items, and then they're sending it to the auditor's office, and then we validate that they have the money in the budget to pay it, that the invoice matches the amount that they've entered in the system and they're not duplicating the payment, and then we will process it.
Are you aware of any situation in Indiana state government where a state agency is responsible for paying a vendor, but they're not responsible for what that vendor does?
No. In fact, I would have a hard time with that, because if I'm going to be responsible for paying a vendor, I would want to have some assurance that the vendor was providing the services that we were paying them for. Oftentimes when we're dealing with confidential information, whether that be with the inmates at DOC or FSSA, for health reasons, they won't send data over. They'll keep it at the agency, and then if anybody needs access or has questions about it, they just go to the agency directly.
Okay.
As we noted, FSSA's response has been to repeatedly deny any responsibility and refuse our requests for an interview. That is until we presented them with the answer the SSA's Doug Wynn finally gave to our question about who's responsible for monitoring the work of vendors like Albert Fink. That response read, in part, "Each state agency is responsible for comprehensive oversight management of its CE program. The states are responsible for monitoring CE providers and resolving service issues." In other words, how Indiana Auditor Tara Klutz confirmed all state agency business is conducted. Whatever work Albert Fink did or didn't do on those 10,567 disability claims cases, the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration paid him and is responsible for the quality of those exams. As of this broadcast, the agency is reconsidering our request for an interview. Albert Fink has not been accused or convicted of any wrongdoing in his practice involving Social Security disability claims. His age and felony conviction in the criminal case make it unlikely that any more charges would be filed, regardless of the outcome of an investigation. Our goal in this project was to show the impact of Albert Fink's crime on the criminal justice system in Indiana and on the system of handling Social Security disability claims. It seems while justice is working in the criminal courts in Indiana, justice for the Indiana residents named on the over 10,000 reports filed for disability claims by Albert Fink remains to be seen. I'm Steve Berger. You've been listening to A Scar on the System, a collaboration of WNIN and Side Effects Public Media. We want to acknowledge the financial support of the Fund for Investigative Journalism, as well as assistance from the public records database company, DocsPop. Reporters for this project are Samantha Horton, Ron Brown, and Jake Harper with Side Effects Public Media. Editors are Carmel Roth, also with Side Effects, and Julia Gregg. Sound designer and music composer is Brick Briscoe. AJ Casey is the videographer and field engineer. Our researcher is Isaiah Seibert. Brad Kimmel is the president and CEO of WNIN. This is a production of WNIN Tri-State Public Media.